of protection for
all your devotees,
whom you satisfy by manifesting yourself in various forms. O my Lord, you deliver your devotees from the clutches of material existence. Non-devotees, however, remain entangled in material existence by your will. Kindly accept me as your eternal servant. And then text 19. Anayashamaya guna chitta vritti vir nirikshito yanva pitrishtirajate isheyata no jitta manyurang hasam kastang namanyeta jigisuratmanaha. Translation. We cannot control the force of our anger. Therefore, when we look at material things, we cannot avoid feeling attraction or repulsion for them. But the Supreme Lord is never affected in this way. Although he glances over the material world for the purpose of creating, maintaining, and destroying it, he is not affected even to the slightest degree. Therefore, one who desires to conquer the forces of the senses must take shelter of the lotus feet of the Lord, then he will be victorious. So, purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada, Gijai. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is always equipped with inconceivable potencies. Although creation takes place by his glancing over the material energy, he is not affected by the modes of material nature. Because of his eternally transcendental position, when the Supreme Personality of Godhead appears in this material world, the modes of nature cannot affect him. Therefore, the Supreme Lord is called transcendence, and anyone who wants to be secure from the influence of the modes of material nature must take shelter of him. So, Om Gana Timadandasha Gananjana Shlakaya Chapshuddha Meditam Gena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. So, Satya Sai Baba. Pendravai Sai Baba. So, So, as mentioned in the Gita, Krishna is very much equal poised as far as the things in this world. This is an interesting verse. Samoham sarvabhuteshu namidvesho stina priyaha. And this verse means, I am equal to everyone. Samoham sarvabhuteshu. Sarvabhuteshu means all living entities. And I have no friends and no enemies. Of course, this doesn't refer to the spiritual world where Krishna has his friends. This refers only to the material world, this particular verse. You understand? Only to the material world. So one may ask, how can you say that Krishna has no enemies when he appeared on this planet 5,000 years ago? He certainly had a lot of enemies, right? I mean, even from the very beginning of his life, he was killing people. And the first person he killed was Putana. Putana came from a very nice family. Her brother was who? Anyone know? Huh? Bakasura. You know, the big duck demon with a big mouth that Krishna broke later on. Anyway, so... it's a very interesting story, the story of Putana. What happened is that we have to go back to her past life. Because this explains a lot. In her past life, she was the sister of Bali Maharaj. And Bali Maharaj, we know, had conquered over all the universe and sent the demigods away from the heavenly planets. And he was performing the 100th Ashvamedha sacrifice, and so he could actually get, like, real superiority over everything. And as he was getting ready or doing the final swaha business in the Ashvamedha sacrifice, who appears but Lord Vamana? Upendra appears. Anyway. Upa Indra. Upa can mean close. You understand? Or smaller Indra. There's two ways to understand it. Like the younger brother of Indra. Upa Indra. Upendra. Just like we have the Upanishads. Why are the Upanishads called the Upanishads? Does anyone know? No, no one knows. What?
It's deep and great knowledge.
Yeah, they give knowledge, but why are they called the Upanishad? Because upadekshanti te jnanam, jnani nastatvadarshana, that you have to approach the spiritual master. Does anyone know that? No, no one knows that verse. Tadvidi pratibhattena paribrashnena sevaya. Upadekshanti te. So you have to come close to the spiritual master to get the knowledge. Therefore, you find that if you read the Upanishads, many cases they're actually dialogues between guru and disciple. Not all of them, but some of them are dialogues between guru and disciple. Upanishad. So, very interesting statement. So, anyway, so Upendra, Upanishad. So Lord Vamanadeva appeared, and we know that he sort of had this idea to trick Bali Maharaj. But what happened is that his sister, Ratna something, she looked at Lord Vamana first before Lord Vamana did his dirty trick. And she actually felt maternal affection for him. Yankee milk came from her breast, and she was thinking, I wish that this little Brahmin boy could be my son. Just like ladies naturally feel maternal affection for little children, isn't it? Even if the child is not their child, sometimes they pick up the child and go like this. And it's interesting. It's natural maternal instinct. It's actually nice. Of course, nowadays, that maternal instinct is not so much respected, and so the ladies are sometimes encouraged to kill the child, right? That's called abortion. I remember when I was just listening to a conversation Prabhupada was having yesterday that Prabhupada was saying, in those Western countries, they're so demoniac that they're, you know, killing the child in the womb. And then one of the devotees said, well, now it's happening in India, too. And Prabhupada was surprised. Happening in India? How can it happen in India? But anyway, it's just as rampant in India. So this lady, she experienced this maternal affection for Lord Vamadeva, and she was thinking in her heart, I really want to have him as my son. You know, I'd love him. I'd like to hold him in my arms and go, whatever they do. You know, goochie, goochie coo, whatever the mothers do to babies. Like, and so she was thinking like that until Lord Vamana pulled his trick and he took everything away from Bali Maharaj and sent him down to the lower regions. And then she got angry. She said, if I have him as a son, I'll kill him. So it was a mixed desire, right? Okay. So next birth, she takes birth as Putana, a mystic demoness. There's this word, Khichari, in Sanskrit. It's not Khichari. Khichari means like a witch that flies on a uprooted tree. Not a broom, an uprooted tree. In America, we have this holiday called Halloween. I don't know if you have that here, do you? No. Where all the children dress up as witches and demons. And they go to people's houses and beg from them. They go on Sankirtan. And some people dress up as devotees, even if they're not devotees. I had one disciple before he joined the Hare Krishna movement, he went on Halloween and he dressed up as a devotee. Next thing he knew, he became a devotee. Can you imagine that? He goes out, trick-or-treat, that's what they say, and Hare Krishna, and he wore like an artificial bald head. And then, because he was imitating, Krishna accepted. Krishna's very kind. So, getting back to the point, is that she really wanted to kill Krishna. So anyway, she was Putana, and Kamsa, our friend, he was thinking, you know, how can I kill the child who was meant to kill me? You know, he is a little bewildered because the eighth son of Devaki and Vasudev didn't appear, at least to his eyes. You know, first of all, he thought there was a miscarriage before. Of course, that was Lord Balaram. And then he thought there was a girl that came out, and that was Mahamaya, or Durga. And Durga actually said to him, she said, the child that's meant to kill you has actually been born elsewhere. So you better worry, Kamsa. And so anyway, so Kamsa said to Putana, you should kill not just Krishna. He didn't have an idea who or the person was who was supposed to kill him. He said, you should kill everybody who was born within the last 2 weeks or 2 months in the surrounding villages. And she was very enthusiastic. You know, talk about enthusiasm. I wish I was so enthusiastic to serve Krishna. So she could fly in the air. He's a demon. So she flew in the air, went around, and she was killing a lot of little kids. Finally, she comes to Nanda Maharaj's house, and she transforms herself into a very beautiful lady. It's like having the example given in the Bhagavatam is like a gilded cage, and then you have a snake inside the gilded cage. Gilded cage means like with jewels on the cage and everything. And inside there's a venomous cobra. So she walks in, and of course everyone thought, oh, one of the demigoddesses is coming from the heavenly planets to see Krishna. And she picks up Krishna, and Krishna, he closes his eyes. And the acharyas explained that Krishna closes his eyes for various reasons. One reason is that he has to kill a woman. He doesn't want to look at her while he's killing her. Because generally, Krishna doesn't like to kill women, although it happens sometimes. Like Lord Ramchandra killing Taraka, the first demon. First demon Lord Ramchandra killed was like that, too. So, and he was reluctant. Finally, Vishram Mitra Muni had to encourage him. So Krishna closed his eyes, and also the acharyas explained that something was being dictated to her from Krishna, too. So like Krishna was giving her internal dictation. So Krishna grabbed her breast and sucked the life air out of her. But the interesting thing is that she got liberated, and she became like one of the mothers in the spiritual world. She had the relationship of being mother. So she went back to home, back to Godhead. Pretty good, isn't it? So that's one example of Krishna being samaham sarvabhuteshu namigvesheshu dinapriyaha. That Krishna doesn't really consider anyone to be his enemy. Now the reason, or especially his friend, now the reason Krishna doesn't consider anyone to be his enemy or friend is that Krishna doesn't need anything from anybody. And Krishna also cannot be hurt by anybody. Two things. You know, we have friends and enemies because we need something from someone. Like we make friends with politicians because we want something from the government, or we make friends with a bank. I remember many years ago, when we established one of our temples in the United States, we needed to get a loan from the bank. And we had no credit to buy the property. So what I did is I made friends with the banker. I would bring him prasadam. I would give him some books, you know, put my arms, his name was Mr. Riley, actually. Put my arm around him. We became very, very good friends. So then, after making good friends with him for about a few months, I walked in and said, can you lend us some money? And without any credit check, you understand credit check? Without checking anything, you know, because we didn't have much credit. He said, of course, whatever you want, you can have. Because I needed the money to spread Krishna consciousness, obviously. I had to buy saris. But to spread Krishna consciousness. So he immediately gave. It's nice. So that's friendship for Krishna. Generally, that would be in the mode of passion. You understand that you make friends, you cultivate people just so you want something. So, of course, I liked him also. It wasn't like completely artificial. I really liked him because he was reading Prabhupada's books. Eventually, he passed away and went back to Godhead. No, I wish he went back to Godhead. So the point I'm making is that that's what we do with friendship in the world. We need something from someone. Like, you know, a young man approaches a beautiful young girl because he wants to possess her, right? Wants to possess and enjoy her. And the girl approaches the boy because she wants him to worship her. I mean, that's practical. I mean, I'm not going to ask the ladies about that. But they want to be the word. I was asking one lady, you know, why is this psychology? Because I don't understand woman's psychology that well. And she said, I want to be cherished. You know the word cherished? That's a fancy word. You know, worship, you know, considered to be the apple of someone's eye. I don't know if you know that expression, or the mango of someone's eye. Right? So it's not, if you want something from someone, that's the point. You want to possess them, you want to enjoy them, you want them to support you, you want them to worship you. So in this way, we need something. Good. It's all right. I'm not criticizing. Maybe I am. But it's all right because we have some lack. You understand? Because we have some lack. Like, sometimes they say, you know, man is incomplete, woman is incomplete, and they put them together and they're complete. So there's a lack. Even the non-devotees talk about finding your soulmate. It's a romantic class. Anyway, so, making yourself complete. So anything we do in this world, it's to try to make ourselves complete. Like eating. You know, there's a sense of incompleteness, because we're hungry. And so eating makes us feel complete. Or whether we're going for shelter, whatever. It is always an idea of doing something for ourselves. I mean, just to be honest. Or protecting yourself from your enemies. Like if you see a mosquito here, you get angry, right? Because the mosquitoes can cause this dengue. So you want to keep screens on your window. Or, you know, you want to swat, or you want to fan your guru so he doesn't get any dengue fever, you know, fan him. So those are your enemies. Mosquitoes, your enemies. Snakes, your enemies. You don't have any snakes here. Scorpions, your enemies. Your business competitor is your enemy. Like sometimes you find people, even in one family, there'll be people selling the same product, right? And they'll compete against each other and they're enemies. Like that. Or if you're a kshatriya, you know, people who are trying to conquer your kingdom of their enemies. So either because of a sense of incompleteness or protecting what you have. That's similar to the kshati shoshati, hankering and lamentation, you know, very similar to that sort of statement. So, guess what? Krishna, he's Purna. Om Purnamada Purnamidam, right? He's perfect and complete. And he doesn't need anything. And he doesn't need protection either. Because Krishna is apta kama. Apta kama means he gets whatever he wants, whenever he wants it. That would be nice, isn't it? I would like to have that ability. up the comma, you know. I want a new temple. You know, I would do it for Krishna. I wouldn't do it for myself. We want a school for the children. Then we wake up in the morning, and there it is. Wow. I want the PM to be Krishna conscious. Boom. You know, many times I ask the deities for something, and they don't do what I say. You know, I get a little frustrated. I say, Krishna, please do this. Please give me this, or please free that devotee from Maya. And Krishna says, you know, I'm not your order supplier. You know, I'm not going to interfere. You know, sometimes I pray for someone's spiritual benefit. I say, you know, because many times we have disciples in Maya. Well, probably most of them are in Maya. So, you know, I'll pray for a particular disciple. I did this the other day here. I was in front of, I went through all three deities. And I said, Krishna, free this disciple from Maya. Make them come back to Krishna consciousness. I was praying really hard. But Krishna doesn't have to do what I say. It's kind of frustrating, isn't it? To have a God who doesn't do what you say. Because he's independent. And I said, why did I join the Krishna consciousness movement if I can't pray and get an immediate response to my prayers? He said, I want to be able to text Krishna. And Krishna just to text back, the money's in your bank account, you know, I just wired it to your bank account. Something like that. You know, isn't it? People get frustrated with God sometimes. Like Prabhupada talked about World War II, how they had the Nazis and the other party, you know, the Americans and British and everything like that, fighting against the Nazis. They were all praying to God. And, you know, please let our sons come back from the battlefield. And Prabhupada jokingly said, you know, Krishna was confused because he didn't know which prayers to answer. So it's like that. We have this concept. Of course, we should pray to God, but he can do whatever he wants with our prayers. It's not like sometimes in the Christianity, they have this whole concept that if you pray, you'll get what you want. Like they have this, what is it called? Faith healing, right? They have people get up on the stage. You ever seen this? And someone, you know, has crutches or is just like that. And they say, Jesus, heal this man. Make him whole again. And all of a sudden the guy goes, Haribo! But actually that's just a trick. You know, he has friends or paid people who act like they're disabled. And then they get up on the stage and they jump around, you know, like that. People can be cheated. This world is filled with cheaters and cheated. Just like that. I mean, there's so many people. Like there's someone in Brazil who's supposed to do like surgeries on you right on the stage, you know, like psychic surgeries. And it's, you know, so many people get cheated. Even some of our devotees have gone to these places to get psychic surgeries or cures for this disease or that disease. Anyway, the point I'm making is that Krishna's independent. That's another word. Swarat. Swarat means he's independent. He's not controlled by you. Of course, he's controlled by Srimati Radharani. But still, he doesn't always do what she wants. Even with her. Krishna's controlled by her, but Krishna wants to get her angry. Like in the past times, sometimes I mentioned this the other day, he's calling, say, in the Radharani, your face is like a moon, and he uses the word Chandrakali. It's like many moons, which is the name of Radharani's competitor. So he does things to aggravate her. So don't we think that Krishna will do things to aggravate us too? In order to make us Krishna conscious. Krishna does that to enjoy the loving exchange, to bring the relationship closer, to spice up the relationship. Krishna always has a good reason for everything he does. But he's independent. So because he's independent, he doesn't need anyone. All of his desires are fulfilled just by his wanting his desires to be fulfilled. Therefore, he can be equal. That's a really important point. So a devotee, getting to the point, we should also be equal. You know, Samadarshi, there's so many descriptions in the Bhagavad Gita. Samaham, that's Krishna, of course. Samadarshi, Vidyavidya, Sampane, Brahmani, Gavihashni, Shunichaiva, Supakicha, Pandita, Samadarshana, or Samadhamattapaksho, Cha, Shantirarika. I mean, there's so many times this word sama, or being equal poised, is used for devotees. So how do we get to the stage of being equal poised when we also have these needs and we look at things to fulfill our needs, isn't it? Like, you know, you have certain needs. I'm hungry, so I want food. Therefore, you're my best disciple because you feed me nicely. You know, so how do we get away from that? We get away from that by being, what is it, tushanti cha, pramanti cha. Machita madhyata prana, oriyantas cha parasparam. Katiyantas cha mam cham tushanti cha, pramanti cha. So the whole point, if you want to be equal poised, you have to be tushti. Tushti means satisfied. And also, you have to, ramanti, you have to enjoy. And the only way you're going to be satisfied and enjoy and equal poise, therefore, is machita makata prana boryantascha parasparam. That giving your heart and soul to Krishna. Katyantas tamam nityam. That is always being absorbed in Krishna kata. You know, so because the things of this world will always be dissatisfying to you. Just like, you know, last night we had a temple meeting. And this is like, you know, the mind, you know, all these things, you know, dealing with different characters or whatever. And after the meeting, even though it was late at night, I picked up a book by one of the acharyas. Actually, Gopal Champu, I can mention the name. Jiva Goswami's book about Krishna's pastimes and the holy Dhamma of Vrindavan. So I started to read and I felt so satisfied. Before that, you know, my mind was going, what about this guy? What about that guy? What about, you know, we discussed so many things at the meeting, right? Festivals, what happens with the money from the festivals. This person wants to be independent. That person wants money. You know, so many things went on. So if you go to bed in that sort of consciousness, there's a time for everything. There's a time for bed. Just like this morning, we were going for our japa walk, and Jivanath had a... So he said, Sanatan wants to speak to you on the mobile phone. I said, no. Business comes later. So a devotee should be like that. If you want to be tushanti cha, ramanti cha, you have to take as first priority your hearing and chanting. And certain times of the day should be sacred times, like the Brahma Muhurta time. It's not a time to invest in the stock market, to surf the internet, right? You have to just be very focused with good sadhana. And before you take, like Prabhupada instructs, before you take rest at night, he said, read Krishna book, read Krishna's pastimes. Instead of discussing all the politics of the day, you know, who's going to win the next election, or I don't know what else you discuss at night. You know, all the problems you have in life. So you, like, sometimes we compare that to a sandwich. It's called ISKCON sandwich. Like in the morning and the evening, they're the two halves, the two pieces of bread. And the middle of the day, you can put some other stuff in. In the material world, the best thing is in the middle. You know, sometimes you eat the bread first, so you can get the middle, at least the crust. You know the crust? You know, you have bread, the crust. So I remember when I was young, I would just eat the crust to get the bad stuff over with first, so I can get the good stuff in the middle. Did anyone ever do that? Yeah, you know, people like bread here, don't they? So, because no fish in the middle, though. Prashadam. So, but it's the opposite with our lives. The nectar is in the bread and the outside. And inside is something we just do so we can eat the bread in the evening. and in the morning. So that's Dushyanti cha, Ramanti cha. And then you're equal. You can treat people equally then. You can be a friend for all living entities. Yastu sarvani bhutani atmana ivanu pashati. Sarvabhuteshu chatmanam tato navigigupshate. That's in Upanishad. One can see everyone equally. And like Prahlad Maharaj, no friends, no enemies. Just consider everyone to be an object of compassion. So that's how you do it. Otherwise, you're just going to be treating people unequally and, you know, discriminating between friends and enemies. So this is a very important point. So any questions or comments about these points? I think we've covered a lot of ground. Yeah. What Lord, who promised to kill? Oh, you said Sugriva and Bali, the other Bali. Oh, yeah. Why did he kill Bali? That was compassion, because Bali had committed a sinful activity in taking his brother's wife, mistreating his brother. I mean, that's I think most people know that in the Ramayana. That Bali had done something, like Sugriva was faultless because he was thinking his brother, anyway, there's the whole story in mind, thinking his brother had been killed in the cave where he was fighting the demon. But Bali treated him like a dog. He took his wife away. And he was having a relationship with Sugriva's wife. Now, in the Vedic culture, I don't know what you think about in today's culture, but in the Vedic culture, according to the Manusamhita, someone could be dealt with very, very severely for that. And that's compassion, too. When you kill someone, I'm not saying you should do it. That's done by the king or the president or the PM, not by us. We don't run around with machetes or, what are they called, sugar cane knives? What do you call them? Huh? Cane knives? You call them cane knives. It's not that if a devotee is offended, you go out and get a cane knife and just, like Parashuram there, you know, and just go chopping people's heads off. That's the business of the government. Lord Ramachandra was acting as a representative of the government. That was Bart, who was in charge of the kingdom at that time, because Lord Ramachandra was in the forest. So it's mercy. When a murderer is killed by the government, it actually gets rid of the bad karma he has. It's capital punishment. So what Bali had done was practically on that same level. You understand? And the proper punishment for him was, and that's compassion, because we understand the soul's eternal. Nowadays, when people have this capital punishment, you have capital punishment here in Fiji? No. People say, you know, anytime there's a capital punishment, a murderer is going to be killed somewhere, there's a big protest from all over the world. They say this is cruel punishment. But it's not. It's compassion. Because for a variety of reasons. One reason is the person is freed from his karma. Second reason is society at large is freed from the burden of this person. You know, having to take care of him for the rest of his life. And then sometimes he gets out and does another murder. It's called recidivism. That's a fancy word in English, which means that someone commits the crime again, goes back to prison. I know that many cases in different countries, the prisons have revolving doors because someone goes in and they come in again and they commit a crime and go in again. And the prisons are basically places where you can learn to be a good criminal. You get good association. Just like in the temple, we get good association to hearing and chanting. So you go to prison, who are you associating with? Other criminals. And so you get together, sadhu sangha, sarva shastra koi, lava matra, sadhu sangha, sarva siddhi hoi. You know, asat sangha. Asadu Sangha, Asadu Sangha. Anyway, whatever. And you talk about, what did you do? Oh, that's a good idea. I should do the same thing. Yeah, let's get together. And so it's a question they all get together and plan out their future criminal activities. So sometimes it's better. Like Lord Ramchandra, there's that story that one time there was a Shudra who was doing brahminical activities and was creating problems in the kingdom. And what did Lord Ramchandra do? He killed him to protect the citizens. So this is also compassion. Not that we have this artificial idea of compassion. So when Krishna kills the demons, that's what I pointed out with Putana. When Krishna killed Putana, it was out of compassion. And she became Krishna. And when Krishna kills any demon, they get liberated. Krishna's equal. The whole question was raised also in the Bhagavatam, that if Krishna's equal, why does he favor the demigods? But Krishna's doing the best thing for everybody. And the best thing for society. That's the way Krishna looks at it. So therefore he favors the mode of goodness. Because that's the best thing. Even for those in the mode of ignorance. I mean, the Manusamhita is very heavy about punishments. Some of the punishments are so heavy, they're unbelievable how people should be punished. And nowadays you can't talk about these things because people will criticize you, like having a thief with his hand cut off. Isn't it? But what happens if the thief has his hand cut off? It's hard to steal after that. Unless he uses his teeth. It's hard to pick someone's pocket with your teeth, isn't it? You know, you see someone going through your pocket with his mouth, you know. He's a pick mouth. So it appears very heavy, but there's reasons for those things. It is compassion. Yeah, Jambalaya. Well, there's more to the story than that. There's much more to the story than that. There is that injunction if someone sets fire, if someone kidnaps your wife. Of course, if your wife leaves voluntarily, you don't kill him. It's kidnapping. And anyway, that's another thing. But Prabhupada said, there was one devotee who actually followed that injunction, who killed the person who took his wife away. And Prabhupada said, that's not permitted because, premeditated murder is not permitted. If someone's in the process with a gun of taking your wife away, he's right in front of you, and you're protecting your wife, that's when and it's all right. You understand the difference? That's the protection. Like if someone came and tried to kill you, Jambavan, and I had a gun, I could shoot him. But if someone attacked you and it was 4 days later and I knew where he lived, that's up to the government, not to me. You have to understand the context. Prabhupada made that very clear. Because Prabhupada said when this devotee went and killed the person who had an affair with his wife, Prabhupada said it's a greatly sinful activity, wasn't proper. So we're talking about, in the instant, protecting someone, not premeditated. Does everyone understand that point? It's a very important point. Yeah. I can kill someone who's attacking you right now, but not 2 days later. 2 days later, it's up to the government. Not to me. But and also it's my duty. If I see someone being attacked, it's my duty to defend them. Like Prabhupada commented about New York one time, there was one lady being attacked in New York on the street, and people were in their apartments watching with their binoculars or whatever. They were watching, you know. Now that is greatly sinful too. If you see someone being attacked, it is your duty to protect them, and my duty too, to protect them. So, okay. It's a very important point, and I'm happy you asked that question. Alright, thank you very much. All glories to His Divine Grace. Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada, Ki Jai. Gaur Premananda. Hare Hare Hare.